attention, please.
Hey, y'all. Welcome again after a long, long absence to Back in the Village, the Prisoner podcast. This week we will be talking about the 2009 remake starring Jim Caviezel and Ian McKellen done by the AMC channel. And yeah, that's about it. There's not a lot of clips in this episode because it's really just too hard to get good quality clips because it's very hard to find the show at all. So enjoy uninterrupted time with me and Wes blabbing. So that's about it, and I will see you on the other end. Enjoy. Good morning, good morning. Welcome again after a nice long break to Back in the Village, the Prisoner podcast. We are back in the village, but the village has taken on a slightly different feel this time, as Wes and I will be tackling the 2009 remake done by AMC of The Prisoner, starring Jim Caviezel as number 6 and Ian McKellen as the only number 2. Wes is with me again. Wes, how
are
you doing?
Good, Clay. How are you?
Not bad. you know, this is going to be tough for me. I'm hoping you can keep me grounded in sure. discussing this, because I went into this really wanting to look at it as objectively as possible.
Yep.
And after about 10 minutes, I stopped because it's really difficult for me to view this objectively.
Okay. I have the conflict as to whether or not I should be judging the remake based on the original, or whether or not I should just be judging it based on like its own merits as a TV show.
I think it's really unfair to judge it versus the original.
Okay.
I think the best way to do it is to try and judge it on its own merits.
Sure.
It's
interesting. It's like, I do feel I have a lot to talk about in this episode, even though I probably won't have a lot of specifics about the shows in general. I have a much greater sense of... we watched the first 3 episodes. That's what we're going to be talking about now,
yep.
which are Arrival, Harmony, and Anvil.
Yep.
And at least with this new series, you know which episodes are the right ones to watch. You don't have to question about the order.
Or do you? I mean, in 5 years, people could be like, well, actually, if you rewatch the remake in a different order, it makes more sense.
Yeah, it's. I think this one it's much more clear. But I guess let's start with Well, I don't know. Anywhere in particular you want to start, or do you want to just take it from the top and head through this?
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about just generally is, so this remake of the show came after a very long, drawn-out history of trying to make a remake of The Prisoner. I know that at one point Mel Gibson was attached to do a movie, I think probably around the time he did Braveheart, because he and McGowan were buddy-buddy when they were doing that.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then obviously that didn't happen. And then there was a period of time where Christopher Nolan was attached to do a movie, and I think it was supposed to be written by Andrew Kevin Walker. I could be making that up. He's the guy who wrote 7.
Okay. Well, it's interesting, the Gibson thing with the Caviezel tie-in.
Right, yeah, I was thinking that as well, yeah. But yeah, then, you know, it kind of disappeared for a while, and then it sort of popped up out of nowhere, as far as I remember anyway, in a what seemed to be like a period of a year or 2 years where they just remade all of the things I loved that I never thought would ever be remade.
Sure, sure.
Like this, and The Wicker Man, and shortly, a year or two later, Straw Dogs.
Okay, yeah. It's a period of remakes in Hollywood.
Yeah, still going.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they you know, I think from the get-go, this is a better way to do it, because I think it's very difficult to do The Prisoner as a movie.
Yes, yep.
Unless, I mean, you know, who knows? Unless you're just taking the name, and I guess it really depends on how you approach it. But they chose to do it as a show.
As a miniseries, right? This was only ever intended to be 6 episodes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they...
Yep.
They aired it very weirdly. They aired it over the course of 3 nights, 2 episodes a night.
Yeah.
In retrospect, that feels like they didn't have a lot of faith in it.
Yeah, they just wanted to get it out before the critics could.
Yeah, although,
and yeah. Well, oh wait, go ahead. I don't want to start talking about what I thought of it yet.
I was just going to say, in addition to that, and to the fact that it seems like they just kind of wanted to get it out and have it go away, it's incredibly hard to find. It's not on any streaming service.
I had to buy it on iTunes, and it's funny because I rarely go to iTunes to buy stuff. And I was like, I tried to watch it on YouTube, and they had some weird... It must be a version that the guy made to avoid getting like a copyright pain.
Yeah,
or something.
I think it's like videotaped off his monitor.
It's weird. He like recorded it at like 20 frames a second, so it's super jittery. You can't watch it without it feeling like stop motion puppetry almost.
And then in the second episode, Harmony, something's up with the sound. So through the entire episode, everything is echoed.
Oh yeah, I definitely didn't make it to the second. Yeah. I saw that was garbage. I went on Amazon. You can't stream it on Amazon. I didn't want to buy the DVD because I wouldn't have time. You can't stream it on Netflix, obviously.
It's not on Hulu.
Nope. It didn't show up on any of those weird websites that pop up when you say type in stream blank show into Google. And then I was on my iPad, and it's actually in the iTunes store. So
Even realize that. I didn't even think to look there. But I guess I will be watching episodes 4 through 6 on iTunes.
Yeah, it's only $10 for the standard definition. I splurged
for the whole series.
Yeah, I splurged and spent $16 on the high def. But it's
you got
to get the goods while you can. But yeah, it's not terrible. I think they're $3 an episode if you don't get the season all at once.
Oh, okay, that's not too bad. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it like much like the original. The original is relatively hard to find as well. The DVDs keep going in and out of print.
Yeah,
I think you can watch it. I think you can buy it to stream on Amazon, but that's the only place I've ever seen it. You can't stream it on Netflix. I don't know if that's available on iTunes. I assume it probably is.
It is.
But,
it is. It's not the remastered definition.
Oh yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's this show is kind of difficult to get your hands on, and it's just a really strange beast top to bottom.
Yes.
So did you have something you want to say, or you want to let's just get into it and start? So
okay, well I guess I'll start with a question.
Hit me.
Do you think they should have done more or less tie-ins to the original series in these first three episodes?
Well, I think the answer to that question is going to jump me all the way to my overall opinion of the show so far.
Okay.
Which is, I feel like it's, you know, people say this a lot, but I feel like this kind of applies to this. I feel like it does itself a disservice calling itself The Prisoner.
Uh-huh.
Because it feels to me like just another... You know, generic. Well, I don't know. You ever see generic, but kind of generic. Guy wakes up in a place he doesn't know,
yep.
Et cetera, et cetera. Kind of show, and then every 10 minutes or so, they jam something prisoner related into it, whether it's a reference or just the way the dialogue goes, or it feels very tacked on.
It does. I mean, my answer to that would be I felt they should have stopped trying to tie into The Prisoner so directly. I think the most egregious example is. In the arrival pilot, where the guy he rescues at the start is wearing the Magooan jacket, and then he just looks at the camera and says, "Be seeing you," and then dies immediately.
Well,
it's like, wow.
A little interesting trivia there. Supposedly, that was supposed to be played by Magooan, or at least the story that it goes is the production approached him to have a role in it, and one can only assume it was that role, because what other role in the show would there be for an 80-year-old man?
He could play number two's son.
Yeah.
Just put some makeup and CG him.
Yeah, just, you know, shave his big, bushy old man beard, and he looks like he's 15.
Was Magooan still alive in 2009?
Well, he was approached. No one really knows what the answer is. Whether he agreed to do it or whether he didn't agree to do it, but it didn't matter because he died before production started.
I see. Okay, that makes sense.
I'm sure we could make some crass joke about he got one look at the script and then dropped dead.
the script is what killed him.
But we're much too classy to make any kind of joke like that, so we won't.
Ba-dumps. Yeah, it's just I would have gone... I felt that the attempts to sort of stick the original Prisoner references in really, really stuck out like a sore thumb. And I would have kept calling it The Prisoner. I would have just got rid of all these references, at least the most, like, the bluntest ones, like that guy at the beginning.
Well, that, you know, it's funny because I think the one at the beginning is okay if that was the only one.
I would have been fine if he was just wearing the jacket. I didn't need both of those things. He could have said, because later on characters in the show do say "be seeing you,"
right?
And it feels a little bit more natural. But the way they just shot that one, the guy, it's like,
yeah,
it was just terrible. But if he was just wearing the jacket, that's a nice subtle sort of like nod to the original show.
Also, according to the small amount of trivia I've been able to find on the show, that apparently was actually one of McGowan's jackets that he wore in the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It looks different in high definition. It looks a lot more cheaply made, I guess, would be the thing.
that's how that stuff usually goes. You ever go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and like see the costumes that the guys in the 70s wore?
They look so
awesome in photographs, but you see them up close and it's like, this is garbage. this is barely being held together by string.
Right. No, that, I could totally appreciate that.
But yeah, as a continuation of that initial reference with the old man who dies, referred to as number 93, our new number 6 goes to...
Although, yes, I guess he's called number 6. He's, all right, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I don't mean to...
Well, I have a lot to say,
and yeah. I don't know where to start, really.
We're gonna get into all of it. He goes to number 93's house, and his house is a... kind of like a pastiche approximation of number 6's house from the original show.
Yeah.
It has the same kind of doorway, and it's got the circular entranceways. It's got a lava lamp in it. So that's definitely they were going for.
This is one of the weird things about the show. Like before, just as to tack on, when our new number 6 enters his like place, that is, it's basically a callback to the original series. How he's shown his new like pad that he's going to live in.
Right.
The Caviezel character says that this looks just like my place in New York, doesn't he? He mentions something along. Why, if he's living in current day, does he have a 70s decor house that he's living in New York? Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's funny because if he hadn't said that out loud, I wouldn't have even put it together, because the other things they do in this show, which they don't do in the original, obviously, is they give you flashbacks to Six's life before he goes to the village.
Yeah, we get a whole backlog of information about what he actually did for a job.
Right, and part of this flashback story involves him meeting a woman and going back to his apartment with this woman, and the apartment he goes back to, I guess just because of the way they shoot it, looks nothing like the apartment he has in the village.
No, it doesn't look anything. It doesn't make any sense. They have like those straight out of the 70s, like liquor cabinet things that are like, you know, knee high, and you have to bend down and slide the little door with the circular doorknob that's like an indentation. Mm-hmm. Everything is so dated. I didn't understand why they bothered him saying that line when he clearly comes from like Gotham City in the flashbacks. You know, it's like everything's very dark. His apartment's now, very dark.
You're sure you're not confusing his place with number 93's place, right?
that's the other thing. I don't know if there's... I'm torn about their new numbering system.
Before we get into that,
okay,
just to give a little bit, because we're just kind of jumping in, let's give a basic breakdown of how this arrival episode works. Number 6, or this person who ends up being referred to as number 6, just wakes up in the desert. He sees gunmen chasing after this old man who is wearing the blazer from the original.
He sees sand raiders chasing after.
Yeah, basically Tusken Raiders chasing down number 6, which is I don't know if anyone's ever read my fan fiction blog, but it's pretty close, is all I'm saying.
I'm not saying
there might be legal
off,
action.
Yeah.
and we establish very quickly that this version of the Prisoner takes place, well, A, there's more guns.
Yes.
And B, it takes place in a completely different location because it's a desert location. It's not on the water.
Right.
And after interacting with this old man, he kind of gets, you know, this really vague things about, oh, go see 554 or whatever the number is.
Yes. He doesn't understand anything that this guy's saying because the guy's just saying numbers and be seeing you in the village or whatever. And it makes no sense.
Right. And so then he somehow, he eventually wanders into the village, which is much bigger. It's much more densely populated.
Yep.
And it's actually a lot similar to the way that you described what you thought the village should be like in the last show. Because there's a lot more people have relationships. There's clubs. There's clearly alcohol. It's a much more... what's the word I'm looking for?
It's sort of realistic. It's much more of like a plausible place in some ways, you know? It's not like all the villagers aren't totally sort of like buying into the village system. They really act like real people.
Who just
happen to be in this situation.
Which plays into one of my biggest problems with the show, but we'll get there.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to, as a short note, I'm going to say that this village is one of my favorite things about this new series.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I don't particularly, just to get it out there, I don't particularly like this show. I don't think it's very good.
Yep.
But I do think there are actually really good things about it.
Yes, yes.
And the village is probably at the top of that list.
Yep. Yep.
It's a great-looking place, which apparently was in Namibia, and most of it, as far as I read, was actually... It's much, much like Port Marion, just exists.
Yeah, it's a resort town in Africa. So it's actually African Port Marion.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that was settled by the Germans, I think I read.
Yep.
But
I just like the... I think that the desert is a much more effective narrative prison than the ocean is.
Yeah.
In the original. Like... The desert seems like it's much more dangerous for them to try to leave the village because you'll just like overheat and die, you know, because you'll never be able to find your way out. Where I was thinking the original village might have been more effective if they had shown that it was completely an island. And it wasn't so clearly just sort of a village on the side of a coastline that you could walk away from.
Yeah, they kind of dropped the ball a little bit with that in the original because there's – I forget what episode it is, but you get – there's one point where you can see, maybe it's in Arrival when you actually see the map.
Yeah.
You see the ocean and then like on the back end of the village, it's just mountains.
Yep. Yep.
And that makes sense because you're kind of pinned in two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously you're limited by the actual place you're filming in.
Yeah.
But you know, later when he just takes a car and drives to England, they kind of undercut that a little
and
bit.
They pass the sign that says like 9 kilometers to London or whatever. I just thought that was like one of my major positives about the new one is like I thought that the setting of the village and the way it looked was like a really sort of neat idea.
Yeah, I think overall, I think this show was a really big missed opportunity to just do something really good.
Yep.
Because the work put into it, the production design is great. It looks good cinematography-wise. Almost all of the acting is really good.
We might disagree about that, but we'll continue. But yeah, I guess we should stand track. So you want to continue with the plot about Arrival?
So he gets to the village and, you know, he doesn't know where he is and the usual shit. And he ends up finding this woman who knew 93, and then she knows that, like, she wants to get out, sort of, but is being all coy about it. And then he kind of has a freak out and ends up in the infirmary. I forget why he freaks out.
Well,
but anyway,
Andy befriends the taxi driver who, like, the black taxi driver has replaced the Asian taxi driver from the original.
Much like everything else in this show that is bigger and there's more of it, instead of one black guy in the village, there is one black guy who has a family.
A family, yep.
So and we have one black family in the village.
And he drives the taxi. There seems to be a lot of taxis, actually. It's a very taxi-heavy population.
It's a very mobilized, locally mobilized community.
Yes.
Where everybody's constantly taking buses and taxis and all sorts of other public transportation.
Here,
apparently just in a circle, I guess.
Here's the other It's, I, you know, you've said you didn't really like this show. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say I didn't think it was terrible. I thought it was, I think this show is like really, really bland, which yes. is, which is almost more offensive than being, yeah. if it was like flat out terrible, because I find it fairly watchable. I don't think I would watch it if it was like a 13 episode series, because it's not really grabbing me, but I had no problem going through these three episodes and just kind of being like, oh, let's see what's going on here.
Yeah.
It has a lot of, it has like really great things. Like we mentioned about how I like the village. And then it's balanced out by these really other weird bad things that sort of drag the whole thing into this middle average. Like I was thinking, we mentioned before about how his apartment, he goes, this looks just like my apartment that I live in 2009, and it looks nothing like a 2009 apartment. When he gets into the cab at the start, he goes, take me to the nearest train station. And it's like, what year is this supposed to be taking place in? Like, why would he ask to go to a train station instead of being like, take me to the police, take me to a phone or something, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It has these weird sort of era things. Like, they're trying to make it like the 60s series, and it's just not making sense because he's clearly from present-day America.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking back, that could be, like, a really poorly written, like, foreshadow line jumping to the second episode where
he goes
and he finds that train. Anyway, that's not really... Anyway. it's probably just a weird choice.
Yes.
But, yeah, so he has kind of a freak out. I forget why he freaks out, but he ends up in the infirmary where he meets number two, played by Ian McKellen. If we didn't mention already, number six is played by Jesus himself, Jim Caviezel.
Yep.
Star of a similar show right now. Well, not a similar show, but a show called Person of Interest.
Yes.
Which is also all about surveillance and all that kind of stuff, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, number two is the only number two, and you know, he gives six the spiel about being in the village and that this is the only place there is, I think this is a good point to talk about my big problem with the show is there seems to be no point to any of this.
No, I don't know why I'm supposed to care about this sex
at
all as what he's trying to do
or why two cares about him. You know,
right.
Like,
or why I'm supposed to, because this new series is trying to make you empathize with two at some point.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
And I don't understand why I'm supposed to, because maybe it just hasn't happened yet in the episodes, but in the episodes we watched, we've been shown glimpses that number two is like actually a caring human being who has like some ulterior motive to what he's doing.
Yeah, he has a son and he has a comatose wife, and
yes.
you get a lot of him doting over his wife and loving his son and just showing that he's like a good guy. But we also get the flip side where people are kind of afraid of him, but we're not really sure why.
No, everyone's terrified of him. Like, clearly, they're clearly terrified whenever he calls them in. And ask some questions. They're all like starting to sweat bullets. And he has a penchant for throwing grenades at people.
Yeah. And also a penchant for cherry-based desserts.
Yes. Yes.
Which seems like one of those weird things they did to try and make it seem like the original.
Although McKellen is such a fucking fantastic actor. I could watch that motherfucker eat cake all
that,
day.
Oh, that's, he's amazing.
He is.
Like, I honestly don't mind that he's the only number two, because, you know, if I was just going by, like, if the original series was, if they just straight up remade the original series and had McKellen play every number two, I would be fine with
it'd be, I was upset that you couldn't have a McGowan versus McKellen scene.
Oh,
you know, like,
awesome.
If that was like the cold open to this one, like, it's just like a showdown between those two for like at least like an ambiguous ending, and then it fades off. But
That reminds me, slight tangent here. I didn't mention this in any of the other episodes where we did backstory or whatever, but apparently in McGowan's early acting days, he was in a theater production of Moby Dick.
Okay.
Directed and starring Orson Welles and also Christopher Lee.
Really?
So you had Patrick McGowan, Orson Welles, and Christopher Lee on the stage at the same time.
Doing Moby Dick.
Doing Moby Dick.
Wow.
Which nobody ever thought to, like, make film film a performance of, because I bet that was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's got to be. I didn't realize you could make a stage play of Moby Dick.
I think it was sort of an experimental, like a black box theater kind of thing.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's just awesome.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll get back to McKellen. But I guess so. He meets this number two, and he's given the whole spiel about the village.
Yep.
And then he meets that other woman. Do we meet? What's her number? The pretty young woman.
The waitress.
Oh no, not the waitress. The one who's
like a doctor.
She has the like this scarf on her head all the time.
She is
54 or something like that.
313.
Jesus, 313. Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to talk about the numbers because. So, if you'd like to get into your problem with the numbering system, you can do so now.
Okay, here's my conflict about their new numbering system. The new numbering system is basically where the original series, no one seemed to go above the number like 72, or as far as I can remember. These new people are in the thousands. And they have number two's son is 11, 12.
Well, it if you actually look at how they're numbered, it's not just 1,112. It's actually 11-12.
I thought they were just doing that because it's easier to say 11, 12 than it is to say 1,100.
I thought so too, but yeah, looking, I mean, maybe that's the implication because I'm looking at it now on IMDb, and anybody who has a four-digit number has a dash between it. So it's 11, 12, 23, 30, 21, 16.
Yep.
But it's written as 11-12, 23-30, 21-16.
Okay, so even with that as a consideration, what this is implying is that there are many, many more people in this village than there are in the other village.
Yep.
Which is also fascinating because in one of the episodes, they start to go into like the mythology of the village, like the first number two, like number two, the 14th or whatever they call him. Do you remember that?
That was actually one of the more interesting additions that they added in.
Yeah.
I think that was in the third episode.
Oh, is it? I thought it was in the third because they have the kids.
Yeah. Number six is given the task of teaching intro to surveillance to the kids.
it's just so fascinating.
Yeah, he goes and basically audits a class with one of the other teachers to see how everything works, and that other teacher is teaching history.
Yep.
And is asking all these questions about who, you know, like who was the first person to bring running water to the village or something, and they're like, "Oh, that's number two, the third," or some shit like that.
Yeah.
And they actually also in that scene drop another interesting addition, which I kind of don't know how to feel. I like it, but it almost seems like a cop out a little bit, where it's the only time in the first three episodes that six says who is number one.
Yep.
And one of the kids responds with, "There is no number one. Number one is hold on, I wrote it down here.
Well, number two is a servant. Number two calling himself number two means that he's equal with everyone else. He's right. Just a servant to the village.
There is no number one. The title of number two is a thing of humility.
Yep.
Because everybody is a public servant, so there is no one, which is an interesting idea. But, you know, and I like that idea, but on the other hand, I was like, well, I guess they're not going to be tackling that question anymore.
I guess. I really liked it. I liked that explanation of what that means for what number two means. I don't know where the series is going to end. It's half over, but I don't know if it'll work out that way in the end, but I did like that explanation as to why he is called number two. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of thing. I like that little touch from the original series that makes sense. It's just... it's canceled out by a whole bunch of other stuff. But anyway, does Arrival end at that point? That's pretty much right?
Well, the other big thing that we learn is that the undercurrent for this show and these six episodes seems to be that there are some people in the village who are referred to as dreamers who have these kind of abstract visions of a world outside the village. So the waitress that he meets, the first woman he meets, has a drawing of the Statue of Liberty, but she doesn't know what it is.
Yes.
And number 93 has a drawing that looks like it was drawn by the same person, because that's how production design works, I guess, of Big Ben. And it's that sort of thing. So everybody in this village is knows nothing but the village, but there are some people who are getting these glimpses of something else, something outside the village that they don't understand, and they don't know what it is.
Yep.
And Six is the only person who knows that New York is a place, and you know that there are things outside the village, and he seems to be the only person who knows what the ocean is.
Yep, yep.
And he's given this cryptic message by the dying waitress after an apparent terrorist attack blows up the diner she works in.
Yeah,
or maybe number two threw one of his grenades in there. I don't know.
He probably did.
And she says to follow the towers. There's these two glimmering towers way off in the distance, almost mirage like in the desert.
Yep.
And
very Twin Tower.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was wondering if that was on purpose.
It has to be. I don't think you can create two towers and not have them be Twin Towery.
So Six makes his way off through the desert to try and get there. And, you know, in the first real big example of just jamming prisoner stuff in it, like the last 5 minutes of the first episode, I feel like the last 5 minutes of all three of these episodes make no sense.
I feel the director went to Caviezel and was like, "You just start acting crazy for no reason." Did you see the way he was running in the Arrival ending? Why is he running like that?
I don't know.
Like flailing his arms.
I feel like the only thing he does in the first three episodes of this show is drop to his knees and scream.
Oh, and sweat. He's sweaty in every single shot, yeah.
But yeah, so he runs through the desert and drops to his knees in terror as, you know,
Rover.
The 21st century Rover flies up and, you know, goes over him and sucks him up.
Rover looks awesome in this.
Rover does look great. Yeah. He looks really good. But yeah, it's like that shows up out of nowhere.
Yep. He delivers the "I am not a number, I'm a free man."
Oh god. Okay, so let's get into my biggest problem with this show. Aside from that, the village doesn't seem to do anything, or there's no point to anything. He is such a goddamn wet blanket as number six. Like, I think he's terrible.
Well, here's the thing. You mentioned before you thought the acting was good. I think it's
some of it.
I think it's universally good, except for Jim Caviezel.
He's the worst.
I was watching I was watching the first episode, and I was like, you know, maybe Caviezel's just not getting the lines. And then I watched it. I was like, well, everyone else is doing fine. So what are the odds that the writer just couldn't write number six? Like, McKellen's doing great. That girl is doing great. The taxi driver's fine. Everyone else is fine. He is so bland and like wooden in his performance. And then I was Googling him. And, you know, he was giving some speech in 2011, and he just claimed that Hollywood rejected him after he played Jesus Christ in Passion of the Christ, or whatever that movie was called, The Passion.
Yep.
And I was like, Jim Caviezel, maybe it's just because you're not very good at acting. I think that might be, judging by what I'm seeing.
He's not, you know, from the other stuff I've seen him, he's not like a bad actor.
He's not dynamic.
Yeah, he's got like... I mean, they even have him do a callback to the hand slamming on the table thing.
Yes, yeah. Totally unconvincing.
Oh my god, it's the worst. It's terrible. He just like lightly slaps his, you know, chops his hand down. He's like, "Hey, chill out, man.
Just stop it."
When he delivers the "I am not a number, I am a free man" line at the end of the first episode, I wanted to hang myself.
No, it's really bad.
I will find a way to escape! Hear me! I am not a number! I'm a free man!
And it does not help that when he's in a scene with McKellen is just crushing him.
Oh,
and there's,
he's destroying.
And there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Like, McKellen is so good. Even the way he says six is like... amazing, because it's kind of hard to describe, but he kind of does it like as an afterthought.
Yep.
So he'll say like, "Do you like the food? Six." Like, you know, like it's not just "Do you like the food? Six." It's like, "Do you like the food? Six." Like,
right,
he kind of
hammering it home.
"What were you doing in the mountains? Six."
Kind of similarly to the way that Leo McKern does it a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got that kind of weird, like, slightly off-kilter delivery of the line that makes it stand out.
Right, yeah. It's, you know, the difference between the two of them is that in the show, there are a lot of shots of McKellen reacting to something, and he does it basically all with his eyes. Like, either the way he says something, he'll sort of, like, he'll open his eyes, to, you know, to see, like, I'm either testing you or, like, or he does, like, mock shock when he's told things.
Mm-hmm.
Caviezel does none of this and is just, like, blankly, like, banging on the table. And I don't understand what the, like, all it did for me is it made McGoohan's performance stand out as, like, being necessary.
Yeah.
Even if I didn't like the way he played six all the time in the original, I found it sometimes a little grating. At least he's doing something. You know, and it's like it becomes watchable at that point.
Yeah, and I think so. I think it's a combination of things that makes this show not work for me, and a lot of them have to do with Six himself.
Yes,
because the way Caviezel plays him is just totally bland. But every time they try to write in some sort of like Six style dialogue, it feels completely, like, unearned.
Yes.
Like, they write in a lot of those things where he's, you know, like, I'm not a number, or, like, he'll get in number two's face and say, the only thing that I'm interested in is getting out of here, and, you know, like, those classic kind of, you know, spit-in-the-face six lines. But Caviezel is so non-threatening.
Right, yeah.
That,
yeah.
Like, you've not really gotten any indication that what he's trying to do is get out, or like he cares.
Well,
or
I don't even understand why he's trying to get out. Like, here's my thing for you. I think this show is actually worse if you've never seen the original series.
I would agree with you, because I think about 50% of it would not make any sense.
Yeah, if you watch this without knowing any of The Prisoner, I was thinking during the pilot or Arrival, they take a lot of liberty that you know exactly what the village is all about and what number two is, because they explain nothing. They're basically like, if you were totally blind to this, you'd just be like, what the fuck? Is any of this real? Like, is he dreaming all of this? What's going on? I don't understand what the point of the village is. Why do all these people seem to live there?
Yeah, like there's when number six goes to 93's house and, you know, digs through his shit and finds the drawing.
Yeah, the drunk that dies at the beginning.
Yeah, and he finds the drawing of Big Ben. Number two comes in after him, and they have this sort of like original show kind of back and forth where two is like, oh, I thought you would come here, and, you know, this is coming to visit your friend or something, you know, something like that. And then, you know, he's like, oh, what did you find? And then they kind of bicker at each other a little bit. And then six gives him this retort where it's like, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to break my mind.
Yes.
And it's like, what? They've done nothing to you to imply that they are in any way trying to fuck with your brain.
Two's actually been very helpful to him.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of telling him everything, where he is. And he's just like, you'll never break my mind. And he's like, okay. I'm going to go eat some cake. I'll see you later.
Like, there's like all of those points where it's like, this is the point where Six throws it back in the village's face. It's like, but there's nothing to throw.
Right.
They haven't done anything.
Right. No.
You know, he's gotten like one weird thing where when he wakes up in the infirmary, he sees a guy who looks like he's been, you know, hit by a car or something,
right,
and he like whispers, let me out, or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the guy disappears, and then after that it's just like, hey, number six, I'm number two, this is the village, you know, chill out, have a good time.
Yeah, have a good time.
And it's like, I will not chill out, I am not a number. It's like, well, dude,
had they reviewed,
go to the pool,
I know,
kick off your shoes,
have a nice spritz, it's nice
out. we've got a sweet pool where you can like drink in there, and there's benches, but they're underwater, so it's really comfortable. You're gonna love it.
We haven't mentioned the my favorite part yet. the most insane, bizarre part of this entire series, all they eat are wraps.
It's really weird. I kind of liked it. It's like, I kind of understand what they're doing. It's like it's not the most nuanced like commentary on, you know, people buying food at like a Starbucks or something, how everything is just a pre-made wrap or whatever. At least that's what I assume. Either that or it's just goofy. But that, like, some of those things I actually liked. I thought some of the approximation of the update of the village was pretty cool.
Yep. I thought the wrap is just so odd that it sticks.
Yeah.
It's like the scene where it's not this episode, but the scene where McKellen like resurrects his comatose wife and hangs out with her for an hour. That scene is almost a comedy when he reveals the dinner plate and she's like, "You brought wraps." It's like, it's like, and then the driver is like, "Oh, this is as sweet as a honey nut wrap," and it's like, this is just ridiculous. Why a wrap? Also, I'm annoyed because the wrap is the most inferior of all sandwich types. So I mean, it's really offensive.
Well, I mean, maybe that's why he's trying to get out. Because I'll tell you, if all they served was like panini melts.
Yeah,
I would never leave. I don't care what they're doing to my brain.
Well, I was thinking the tortilla is like the village, and you can never just escape the tortilla wrap. Like, it just surrounds everything.
But yeah, that's more or less the first episode. It's kind of, you know, it's like the first episode of the original. There's more to talk about because it is the arrival and everything. The next two are just to kind of gloss over.
Yeah,
they kind of jump off from there and take the opportunity to do some new stories. Like the episode two, Harmony, involves Six meeting his brother, but it's not his brother because he knows that his brother died when they were kids.
Yep.
But it's like, you know, the usual, no, this is your brother. Don't you remember? We have all these pictures of, you know, like kind of like Dark City.
Yep.
And, you know, then that brother ends up, you know, telling him, you're right, I'm not your brother.
All right, here's, before you do that, I think he does this in Arrival, too.
Mm-hmm.
My other major problem with this number six character, buys the village lies very quickly. And all the other villagers come in and say, no, I'm just fucking with you. Like, you're actually not a number. And he's like, oh, thanks for telling me.
He buys all the lies and he trusts everybody.
Everyone, yeah.
Every single person he meets is like, oh, thank you so much for helping me. I didn't realize that there were so many really helpful, non-malicious people in this village. This is great. We should hang out.
Just the scene in the bus, he's like, you are my brother. I knew it. I knew it all along. And the guy's like, actually, I'm not your brother. I don't know what to tell you, but I'm just doing this for no reason.
This second episode is like, it feels like someone's fan fiction prisoner story where it's like they've tried to approximate the mind fuckery of the show, but they're just not a good enough writer to do it well.
Because
like at the end of that episode, so the whole episode is him dealing with these fake memories of, which aren't even really memories, because it's not like,
well, they are real, like his flashback memories you're talking about.
Yeah, well, no, because he's having his flashback memories, which are real memories, right?
I think,
but
so
as far as we, because it involves his brother dying as a child.
Right.
But then he's being also told he's got all these other memories from his life in the village. But it's like nothing that he does, as far as I remember, nothing that he does and is supposed to remember, he actively remembers himself. So it's like his brother takes him out to this train station. You know, the ruins of this train station in the middle of the desert. And the brother's like, don't you remember this place? We used to come here all the time when we were little kids. And remember that box that you buried? Let's see if that box you buried is still here. And
right,
Six is like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then he's like, wow, looks like that box you buried is still here. And then Six is like, holy shit, you're right. You must be my brother.
Yeah, like, he's like, I can drive a bus. You are my brother. Like, he's like, just sit down. You think I know how to drive that thing?
Yeah, and one of the things undercutting all of this is the fact that we get to see all of this backstory of Six outside of the village before he gets there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like,
is that when are the flashbacks to the woman starting in the second episode?
No, they start in the first one. Okay. They continue through the series.
Oh, do they? I don't remember. I guess that makes sense, yeah.
But like, there's no, okay. So I think this show would have worked better if, number six had just like the structure that they're going with right now, independent from the original show.
Yep.
I think this show would have worked better if number six had just been a mild-mannered village member. If he hadn't been someone who just woke up and found himself in the village and didn't remember what was going on outside the village, or you know, had a life outside. Because, like, this story that they're trying to tell in the second episode is like, remember, you've got all these memories, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And we know that he is not from there. We've seen his other memories.
Yes.
We've seen this implication that he's been kidnapped and brought to this place.
Yep.
So any of this stuff of being like, no, remember when we were kids? You, the viewer, knows that that is bullshit.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
What they're doing in the show is nowhere near convincing enough, at least for my money, to convince this person that what he's seeing is fake or
right.
Whatever.
At least, you know, in the original series, the deceptions were really obvious to the viewer, but it was more about Six getting around it, where in this new series, they kind of play it off like it's supposed to be more mysterious than it is, and the new Six is too stupid to figure out that he's being played, which is kind of an annoying way for their character to go about existing.
And I know this is a comment based on the original show, but you know, Six is always trying to use, when Six is getting fucked with, he's always trying to do something to further his own agenda,
yep.
Which kind of blinds him to however he's getting fucked with.
Right.
In this show, it's like Six doesn't, you know, he kind of wants to get out, but nothing that happens is like, I don't know. I don't even know how to really describe it. But like in this episode when he meets his brother or whatever, he has these moments when he's, you know, veers off the road while he's driving a bus full of people because yep. he sees an anchor and he's like, oh, the water, it exists. Yeah. It's like, all right. And then he falls to his knees and starts yelling.
Yep.
Like at least twice in this episode. And, but it's like, I don't get him as a character at all.
No.
I don't care why he, all of this backstory stuff they're showing you. I could give two shits. I don't care.
Yeah. It's a sort of a weird combination because, as we said before, they've kind of explained that he was involved in like a surveillance company before he got taken to the village.
Yeah,
you get that backstory. The way, if you're listening to this podcast and you've never seen the remake, the best way I would describe it would be like it's a super melodramatic re-imaging of the first series, because the show thinks that I should care about the drama that's going on, and I don't care whatsoever about these characters. Like, there's a lot of like, you know, him looking at people dramatically, or like people sharing dramatic looks, or him looking out a window and stuff. Like, this this never happened in the original series, and in this one, the show thinks that I should care about this person just because he's a lead actor of a TV show, and he's just so boring that I don't care at all.
Yeah, and they drop some big elements of the original show in ways that like don't matter whatsoever.
Right.
But like,
and are potentially confusing.
Yeah, like the flashback stuff. So the flashback takes place right the night he resigns from his job.
Yeah, by and, spray painting on the wall.
Yeah.
I resign.
He just
writes resign. It doesn't even say
he
I resign.
He just
writes resign. It's like, are you telling me to resign or are you quitting? Is this over?
Yeah. And so he meets this woman who is actually Haley Atwell, the woman who plays Peggy Carter in the Captain America movies.
Yes, that's who I'm talking about. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And she turns out to work for the company he worked for or something. And basically, their interaction is the why did you resign sequence of the show.
Yes.
And
done
she's
in
asking,
potentially a worse way.
Oh, it's way worse.
It's terrible.
Because it has no bearing on, like, anything.
No.
Why would you ask these So I don't know if this question is supposed to be something that we give a shit about, but I sure don't.
Well, even just the way they hammered that meeting, he's like, hey, what's your name? And she's like, Betty Lou. And he's like, I'd like to get to know you. She says, oh, yeah? And he says, I'd like to get to know you tonight because the plot demands it. And she just goes up she goes up to his apartment. It's like, what? They met on the street. None of this makes any sense.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because it turns out that she was following
right,
him
she's,
on purpose.
She's planted, so, yes. Yeah. He hit on exactly the wrong person whatsoever.
Yeah. But, well, she actually hits on him because she has to use his phone.
Oh, I see. Okay, maybe I just missed all that.
But anyway, so, like, the why did you resign part of the show comes in this flashback. and has zero bearing on anything that happens in the village.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's not like hammered in, it's not hammered away at the way they do in the original show. It's just kind of like part of casual conversation, but it keeps coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but it like, it just seems to have nothing to do with anything.
Well, what do you think? I think that this show is much narrower in focus than the original one is. So, I mean, what do you think the village represents in this remake?
I have no idea.
See, I mean, I think that they're fairly clear that this show is purely about surveillance, which the original one was not about only surveillance. It was about like a much bigger idea than that.
But even so, though, they don't even like get into that really until the third episode.
Yes, and they get into it poorly in the third episode, but they do get into it in the third. But they're kind of hinting even through the, like, here's one thing I will give the second show credit for, the intro, like the credit sequence,
mm-hmm.
is much more thematically sound than the originals is. Even though the originals is kind of like more iconic and cool, mm-hmm. the idea that he's being watched all the time is how the credit sequence plays out.
Yeah,
you know, it's like all camera work. It's all sort of like security camera footage,
right?
Which makes a lot of sense with the way that the tone of the show took. I think this show fucked up a little bit by missing the NSA brouhaha. You know what I mean? I feel they would have had a lot to draw from that. And they don't really, they kind of exist at a point when this was written where it's kind of like, yeah, I think surveillance is a bad idea. I can't really come up with a reason why surveillance would be a bad idea, but I'm sure it is a bad idea.
Yeah. And like they, but I don't feel like they hammer it home enough as in the village. 'Cause it's like number two seems to know everything that's going on.
Yep.
But there's no reason why he knows everything that's going on. He just does.
He doesn't have, well, he has a couple bodyguards, I guess. But yeah, he doesn't have like a henchman coming in and telling him stuff like the original.
Yeah, or did. Like, you know, some sort, or like the room, the big room where he's got a, you know, he can see everything.
Right, right.
He doesn't have that. He just sort of like knows.
He has that laptop that he can seem to watch people
the
on.
The hallmark of futuristic tablet and laptop technology, which is a clear screen that you can see through.
Yep. Yeah, it's just very, very odd. So, I mean, that's the second one. That ends with that, like, another freak out from Six. Do you want to talk about the third one, which I think is where the show starts to... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
The other thing I want to say about the second episode and the series as a whole so far is, and there are two things that I've seen people mention as very Prisoner-like shows or movies or whatever in reference to the original. And that being the Truman Show, the Jim Carrey movie.
Yeah.
And this show that premiered earlier this year called Wayward Pines.
Yeah, you mentioned that in an earlier podcast. That show is getting really critically hit pretty poorly.
Yeah, apparently the first like five episodes were pretty solid, but then I guess the back end was terrible.
Gotcha.
But I don't know if you watched any of it.
No, I did not.
Well, the first episode of Wayward Pines is like almost beat for beat the first episode of this show.
Okay.
It's very, very similar where guy wakes up just outside the limits of some town that he doesn't know where he is, goes to the town, tries to figure out where he is. Everybody's really happy and has this like Stepford Wife kind of disposition.
Yep.
Except there's a couple people who are like, yeah, this is the village. This is the only place and the best place. But if you really want to know what's going on, meet me here after night.
Right.
And then, you know, who are slipping him the secrets of the underbelly of this place.
Yeah.
And then the guy has a freak out or something, and he ends up in the infirmary where he finds out that the doctors in the infirmary are malicious. And it's like almost beat for beat the exact same show.
Sure.
And the Truman Show aspect really popped up to me in the second episode, because the second episode is very, very Truman Show-y, where you've got these people who are employed by the overlord to make sure that this guy's life goes according to plans and that kind of thing.
Yep.
I don't think either of those things, Wayward Pines or The Truman Show, really apply to the original, because the original in both of those situations, the there is no real in the original Prisoner, you have an active pushback and active conflict between Number Six and the Village.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Village has an agenda, and Number Six has an agenda.
Yeah.
And in, I feel like in both of those other things, your setting is a lot more passive.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, in the Truman Show, the pushback is that, well, it's all actually a TV show, but and they're just trying to keep him in there.
Yeah.
But there's no other agenda outside of we need to keep him in here.
Right. Right.
You know,
because it's for ratings or whatever. Yep.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the problem with this show, because the Village doesn't really seem, at least at this point, there is no agenda to Six, towards Six, other than, hey, just chill out.
Right, yeah, just calm down. Yeah. No, that, yeah, it's true, because his why did you resign seems to happen in the real world, or the outside Village world. And in the,
right,
in the Village, he's just kind of hanging around and taking odd jobs and doing things like that. It is very a very strange.
Oh, my favorite callback to the show, which is very, very subtle, is in episode 3 during one of the flashbacks, when you get a little bit more information about, like, you know, who was in charge of what and like stuff that was going on the floor above his or something.
Yep.
And he says something to the effect of, whoever was in charge up there, and Peggy Carter goes, "You mean Curtis?" And I was like, "Yes, Flapjack, Flapjack Charlie is behind everything."
That's awesome. I missed it. Curtis was my favorite too.
But anyway, so yeah, like, and the other thing about episode 2 is the end of episode 2, like, doesn't make any sense and has no holdover. Like every one of these episodes, the last 5 minutes make absolutely zero sense.
No, it's just melodramatic. In this one, the brother gets killed by Rover.
Yes. Oh, and there's this, like the cutting gets really weird too, because like in episode 2, his interactions with the with this woman, not Peggy Carter, but the other woman that he hangs out with, 313 or whatever.
Yep.
She's like, maybe we shouldn't hang out anymore. And then at the end, you know, he finds the ocean and his brother gets killed.
Yes.
And then they cut to him immediately coming back to this place with 313 and there being no ocean. And he drops to his knees and screams.
Yep.
And then they cut, but there's no passage of time. Like, why would 313 follow him out to this place? Doesn't make any narrative sense.
Right, yeah.
And then he's taken away to the mental institute, where he's put in a straitjacket and starts yelling about, you know, being a person. And then McKellen goes, "Hey, shut up. Your name's Number Six." And he's like, "You're right. My name is Number Six.
Yeah.
My name is Number Six." And then the very next episode, none of that stuff has applied at all.
No.
Like, unless the scope of Caviezel's acting as Six is, kind of not really effective.
Yeah.
Wet blanket Caviezel.
Yep.
Is the rebellious Caviezel.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, kind of ineffective wet blanket Caviezel is also the I am now part of the Village Caviezel.
It's all one of the same. I know that. I didn't understand the ending. I don't understand why he's like, "You're right, I am Number Six. I'm Number Six," and just screaming as he's getting wheeled away. I think the show's trying to be deep, and it's not very deep. It has even less of a point. That sounds insulting to the original. It has no point that the original at least was trying to make. It's just a weird, bland series. Is that the end of the episode 2 when he gets carted off, and that's basically
That's just the end of it.
Yeah, just cuts to black. Huh.
But you wanted to talk about the third one, because I think the third one is the first one where they actually do something kind of interesting.
It's true, although I think the third one is the worst episode of the ones we watched.
I would say I think the second one's pretty bad.
You don't like the second one, yeah?
I don't like the second one, okay. But I like maybe about half of the third one.
Yep.
And then the second half of the third one is just kind of garbage.
I hate all the scenes with his like mentor spy guy or whatever he is. It has one line that is pretty cool, but it does. It's not written well enough. That's the line about like suspicion. Fear is always suspicious, which is kind of interesting. But though I can't remember exactly how he said.
Oh, it's. I think it's like a man with nothing to fear is a man with nothing. A man without fear is a man with nothing to hide, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And fear. Yeah. And everyone who's fearful is suspicious, or something. And if they're not fearful, we should be suspicious. It's something.
Oh, like, yes, yes, that's what it is. Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah.
So it's, I didn't understand. All right. So the driving force behind this episode is that Six agrees to sort of become a trainee with this guy who's spying on the other villagers for number two.
Right.
I have no idea beyond that. They thought it was a clever sort of narrative thing for him to do, why he agrees to do this.
Yeah. Well, so the thing I actually liked, I liked the idea that kind of gets this episode rolling, which is, once he agrees to become part of the surveillance team, there's a moment where, you know, they're explaining how it works, and it's like, yeah, we're surveilling these guys, but they don't know that we're watching them. Nobody is allowed to talk about whether or not they're surveillance people. And Six is like, well, so that means that anybody or everybody could be surveillance people. And
right.
He's like, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's kind of a very prisoner-esque kind of idea where, you know, like you.
It's a callback to the guards thing in the original. You know, you don't know who the guards are.
Right. And you've got this, and this is kind of interesting idea where it's like, well, everybody needs to be suspicious of everybody else because, you know, it's like if you tell everybody a secret, no one knows who else knows that secret,
right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then it goes from that kind of interesting concept into this weird thing with number two's son being secretly gay with Six's surveillance buddy.
And why does the village care?
I don't know. I mean, I assumed it was only number two that cared, but he seemed to know what was going on.
Yeah,
he
seemed totally fine with it. And it was like, I mean, it has nothing to do with the narrative, but it's like McKellen is playing... The gay actor is playing this role, so you're either going to have him play a role that he doesn't sort of agree with, or you can. They play it more as if he's like, you know, you could have just told me, and I would have found someone for you. Like,
yeah.
It comes off as after this guy is after his kid is brutally murdered. His
lawyer, yeah, he fucking kills the guy.
In the most baller way possible, he just like jams him in the neck with a penknife. It's bizarre, but. I think that guy was asking for it because the like mentor, gay lover, spy guy. If you're spying on people, it's not a good idea to leave your spy notebook just laying out where people can see it when they go to get you a cup of coffee or whatever the fuck he asks them to get.
And then like even there too, it's like you get that moment where Six is he finds that book and sees that his surveillance partner is actually surveilling him apparently also 313. But then as the guy's dying, he's like, why are you watching 313? And the guy's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And six is just like, oh, well, okay. That's good. I guess you weren't.
Yeah.
Sorry. You have to die.
This is the episode that really starts hammering home the surveillance point. It's as you mentioned, like he's training the children how to surveil. Like, and their homework is to surveil their parents or something. Is that right? What he asked them to do?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So it's like, do things like that. Then Six tries to flip the table. He's like, how about you all spy on number two to see what two's all about? And I guess at the end, is number two impressed with that girl or is he going to punish her? What was the outcome of that? I wasn't too clear on what he was doing. You know what I mean? After he finds the camera in his
house.
Oh,
at the very end?
Yeah.
Oh, well, see, that's another example of the end 5 minutes not making any sense. Because after the dude's lover gets killed, Six hatches this plot to infiltrate the, like, re-education place.
Yep.
And for some reason, Two's kid helps him with it. And sneaks him into this place, which is just a cave underground, where everybody's just kind of wandering. I actually liked this bit of it because this seemed like a very prisonery kind of thing.
Sure,
where these people are kind of wandering around comatose, and 313 is there for some reason. I don't know why. I can't remember why she got picked up or if they show her getting picked up.
Yep.
And the girl from the class is also there. And it's like, why the fuck is that girl there? What did she do? And then Rover shows up and starts steamrolling people for some reason. And then Six just wakes up in his bed.
Right.
And he's like, oh, that was a strange dream.
Yep.
And then at the end of the episode, Two figures out that the girl from the class was watching him. And he says, we have to send you for re-education. It's like, so is
that a flash stuff, forward? Yeah.
Yeah. Is that like a flashback to explain the chain of events? Or did the stuff that, like, narratively, the visual narrative is completely messed up. Because no reason for us to think that, except for the fact that we already saw her in that cave, there's no reason to think that what happens at the end happened before the cave sequence.
Yeah, no, that's true. The whole third episode, I think you're right there, it ends very confusingly. It's pretty ham-fisted. I think it's the most ham-fisted of the, like, theme episodes. Because they're really, really blunt about what this surveillance is all about. This is the episode where we get a glimpse into Two's home life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has his comatose wife. He has three pills that he gives her, but then he has a fourth pill that magically makes her wake up.
Is he keeping her comatose?
I think so. I think that comes out later in the show.
Okay.
I believe that is the way the narrative goes, but the way that they start showing that is not very good.
Yeah, sure.
Because this may ruin some of the stuff later for you
or
anybody else. Oh. But I believe there is supposed to be a connection between Stu's wife being awake and that giant sinkhole that appears out of nowhere.
Oh, really?
I think. I believe they start... I'm only saying that based on prior knowledge I have of watching it the first time.
Oh, I thought you were going to get something saucy, like she was involved with Six or something. And
No. It's like, again, that's not something that would make any sense.
Yes, yeah.
If you were just watching it or like... I mean, the show is edited so poorly in general.
I think it's cut way too quickly. Like, it's one of the it's this new modern thing. There's just a lot of cuts, and when they do these sort of action sequences, it's too much cutting. And
and it's like I feel like they're trying to shoot or cut the entire thing. Like, you don't know whether or not it's a dream sequence.
Yeah.
And it just makes it confusing,
right? And it doesn't help because everything's washed out in the village because they're in the desert. So it's like obviously very bright, but it has a very dreamlike quality to everything.
Yeah. And I mean, there are some times where it's like kind of interesting where it'll just like, you know, cut from number Six driving a bus to him being tied to a stake with a grenade in his mouth in the middle of middle of nowhere and having some conversation, like some oblique conversation with number Two about stuff you don't understand because they're trying to be all weird about it.
And
it's just like, well, now that you're just cutting willy-nilly like this, I don't know what's supposed to be the real narrative or what's supposed to be like a hallucination,
right,
or
yeah,
what.
Yeah.
I just find it confusing, and not in a way that's like good confusing.
No, I totally agree. It's They're not focusing the narrative enough for me, and they're just sort of bringing in all this other stuff that doesn't feel like it's really going anywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah. And as another thing it points out, or it emphasizes to me anyway, compared to the original, is how you can't – I mean, having a lot of plot does not improve things.
No.
Because this show is incredibly plot-heavy.
Yeah.
You've got the plot of the show, like the episode you're watching – plus, one of these tangential characters has their own plot that's moving forward.
Yeah, that's something I didn't like at all. I think I might have in the original series been like, you know, I'd like to see what the rest of the villagers are up to. If it's anything like this, I think it's a horrible idea to explain that the villagers are basically normal people. That's kind of my one gripe with this. I don't like the fact that so many of the villagers are aware that they are in a weird situation.
Well, it's like, I don't even know if they are. Like, that's the thing. I mean, there's no...
Like, why are they all so scared of Two? He's never done anything that would be fearful. of
things. I hate to keep comparing it to the original, but if they're going to do this, I guess it warrants itself. But like in the original, everybody in the village is so like blissfully unaware.
Yep.
And it's clear that everybody there has been broken basically in some way or form.
Yep.
But in this one, everybody's blissfully aware just because it's like where they grew up.
Yes.
Like there's no, like there's not a lot of evidence that the place that they're in is in any way a negative place.
Right.
I don't, it's.
Yeah, no, it's true.
The pieces that they give you, that number two is actually some sort of, bad person or is doing negative things. I don't think they're giving you enough.
Well, they needed to copy the scene from, I think it's the first Arrival, where it's the two standing on the palace and the rover like attacks that guy who doesn't stop moving when everyone else does.
Yeah,
like that you know, that shows a what Rover actually is. If you're watching this show, you would have no idea what Rover is.
Oh, no idea. I don't know what his function is at all.
So.
Like when he shows up in that cave scene and just like farts light at people,
he incinerates them in his anal blast. But yeah, he's like, and that would set the stage as two is someone who will fuck up other people if they don't obey him, because you know, in this the first scene, whatever that was, they're like, oh, we're supposed to go to the clinic, and the guy's like, the clinic. She's like, we're supposed to meet with two. He's like, what does two want? We're supposed to bring a cake. Oh my God. It's like, why are you so scared? I don't understand.
Yeah, they have this, I feel like they don't know how they want to handle his character, because I'm not saying that he has to be a mustache twirling evil villain.
Right.
But I feel like they're going out of their way to try and make him sympathetic.
Yep.
But in doing that, they're kind of easing off the fact that he is the ruler of this place.
Right, right.
In a negative way.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of the dictator. They're kind of leaning off that a bit. So when they do kind of put those little bits in, it's like, oh, I mean, he doesn't seem like a bad guy.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's very strangely structured that way in how they're trying to get that stuff across.
Well, I mean, the way they've set him up, I will tell you that I will be disappointed if his character does not have an arc that explains why he's doing this.
I believe he does.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're certainly setting it up like they need to... That McKellen's number two has a rationale for why this village is existing.
Yeah, I believe that is covered.
Okay.
But yeah, there's that plot, and then there's the plot of everything that happens in New York before he gets put. Like, there's just so much plot, and everything with him in New York is
love
just...
love stories too.
Yeah, love stories. Yeah. Everything with him in New York is just him and Peggy Carter just talking.
Yep.
And like just giving you information that I don't give a shit about at all.
Yep.
It's like, it was then that I realized that all of my emails that were going to the third floor were not being answered, except for by the people who were on the fourth floor.
What's the name?
And then I was when I realized that maybe the third floor was off limits. So then I went up there on my lunch break because I've been told that their vending machine is better than the one that we have. And then I come to find out they don't have a vending machine at all. So I went back down to the second floor and said, hey, what's up with the third floor vending machine? And the security guard said, the third floor has been closed off for 40 years.
Dun, dun,
it's
dun.
Like, it's like, what the hell's going on?
I know, it makes no sense. So what's the name of their company? SumaCore? Something like that? It's all very, very odd. And it's weirdly specific without telling you anything. He's like, I work in surveillance. I know everything about people, and I can tell things. And which the episode then goes to disprove because he buys every goddamn thing that is told to him. So it's like, you must have been the worst person at your job, and they were happy when you resigned.
He works in surveillance like a guy at Blockbuster Video works in the movies.
Right, yeah, like a clerk at Blockbuster being like, I've directed movies, I can do this. And then he gets there and it's like, I don't know whatsoever. It's real, real bizarre.
Yeah, but so... I don't want to keep this. I don't want to just smash this the whole time because obviously that's the easy way to go. But
I think it's just thoroughly average. You know, it's like, it's not. We're laughing at all the stupid shit that goes on in this. I think this is a dead average series, at least through these first three.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, and it all comes down to that the both main players of the things that make the prisoner, that being Number Six and the Village,
yep,
are completely uninteresting.
Yes.
Or I shouldn't say, well, more or less uninteresting, but like Number Six is not very well defined, and the Village, and the, or I should say the point of the Village is not really well defined.
Yep.
Unless they're just keeping it, you know, hiding their cards to a point where you don't even realize that they're in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know what they've lost? They removed anything that would make this sci-fi. It's like...
Yeah, the only, yeah, they really have.
The only thing
that's
there is Rover.
I think that comes back to...
Oh, does it?
A little bit. Yeah, we could talk about that more at the end.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's just so run-of-the-mill as far as like mysterious location things are now.
Yeah.
And I think... That's the thing, like I was saying before, the reason that that is and why so many of those things are so similar is because they don't have that that interaction and agenda that the Village has.
Right, yeah.
But on the plus side, overall, do you have any things that you really liked about it as we wind down?
Yeah, I like the Village setting. I like the desert around it instead of the ocean. I think that's a plus. McKellen is... a fantastic two.
Yep.
He's better than any of the twos in the original series. he is really the most interesting part of this one.
I would agree.
Outside of his like romance plot, which I don't really care about. I think they didn't need to do that, at least so far. There were some other things. Like I like the sort of little touches that they bring back from the original Prisoner. The small stuff, just like I liked the mythology of the twos. Like,
yep.
That's kind of cool. It's kind of like something I wish would have been in the original. The performances are solid, except for Caviezel. And really the weakest part is the scripting.
Yeah, yeah. I think you summed it up. I mean, I agree with everything you said. Yeah, I almost kind of wish that this show was just about Number Two.
Yes,
because I don't give a shit about Number Six at all.
Right, just every episode is him successfully breaking the new Number Six.
Yeah,
and that's the other thing. Have they ever referred to Number Six as Michael? He's credited as Michael in the.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was wondering if maybe they referred to him in the flashback. That's the only way I can think of it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm sort of let down. Although. I will say that I watched all three episodes in a day and it felt like they flew by. So, I mean,
yeah.
It's not offensive enough TV where I'm like, oh, I can't stand to watch another one of these. It's really just like light snacking for television. You just got to watch it. You're like, I don't think that meant anything. I'll go on to the next one, see if anything changes. And really, you know, I've mentioned it a bunch of times in the original series. Pacing on television has gotten much better. It makes bad TV sort of watchable.
See, that's funny because I think the pacing of the show is terrible.
Oh, really?
Well, just because, like, you know, it feels like they're going along in this weird clip where everything that they're doing is supposed to be, like, heavy and
yes.
interesting.
Yep.
But it's not, the stuff they're actually doing isn't. It's just, like, the way that it's shot or the music they put behind it.
Yes.
Yep. But then at the end of every episode, like I said, they just jam a whole bunch of shit in there. Like a whole bunch of weird shit that's supposed to be like, oh, I forgot I was watching The Prisoner.
Right, yeah.
And the pacing that they do that is just, I just think it's terrible. Because they save, or I don't even want to say save, but they shoehorn all of this stuff in, like, you know, one after another really quickly in the last 5 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's supposed to act as like a cliffhanger or something.
I think
it's
supposed to be a twist, but none of them seem like twists. Like the show is playing them like it's like, aren't you surprised by this? And it's like, no, not really. I agree with you that the narrative pacing is not fantastic. I think it's more like a technical level. Like if the original series had taken one of these scripts and did it, I think it would have felt like it was 3 hours long. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I would give you that.
Just
the
production has changed to the point where I was complaining about the fast cuts earlier, but like scenes change very frequently. So at least you're sort of, you're invested in what's going on, even though it's all nonsense.
Yeah. If I like completely objectively as just like a TV show, I just think I don't care about anything that's happening. I think it's just so, like you said, it's so bland.
Yep. My favorite TV critic is Alan Sepinwall, and he watched this back in 2009. He had never seen the original. Mm-hmm. And he was disgusted by this. He's like, this is probably going to be upsetting to Prisoner fans, but I just thought that was a funny take from a critic who had never seen the original, what he thought of it.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think I might take a page when we get to the end. I might take a page of out of the How Did This Get Made playbook. Uh-huh. And because clearly I don't think I'm going to like this anymore going forward than I do now. But I was thinking about looking at some of the positive reviews on IMDb because there are a handful of them.
Are there? Yeah.
And seeing if we can make heads or tails of, you know, the things that they're pointing out as being positives, or I don't know.
Absolutely.
We'll see.
It's at 18% on Rotten Tomatoes, I think. So,
oof.
Yeah.
I do kind of like that on IMDb. Every episode is rated a 6.
That feels about right.
Which it's, it feels about right as far as the quality of the show. Yes. And as far as the theme and you know, the history of the show goes. It's nice it's always 6.5 or 6.3.
Because I'd say it's if I was just going on a 10-point scale, I think they're like 4s. They're like just this side of average. They're like, just right there.
Overall, I think they missed a good opportunity because, like you said, all the stuff they're working with is pretty good.
Yep.
It's just they couldn't. I think they were a little too hampered by the prisoner aspect or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I would have cut out a lot of that. Same with the naming the episodes sort of after the original episodes when they don't really have. I didn't notice any thematic similarities between them.
Not as far as the originals go. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just another callback. I think they just try. I think they're trying too hard.
Yeah.
You know, I think they had a lot of good stuff, but they're trying too hard to make it, you know, mind bendy and also have like a twist and also be in the same vein as the original. So I think they needed to dial it back a little bit and just, you know, let it breathe.
Yeah. Well, let's see how the final three wrap up, huh?
Yep. Yeah. So I think that'll be it for today's episode. Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Sure, you guys like Star Trek, you can go to thepenskypodcast.com. Clay helps me out. We're doing a TNG podcast. Otherwise, you can go to the Penske File on YouTube. Just search that, P-E-N-S-K-Y. And you can find some gaming videos up there. And that's about it.
Cool. And again, I am by no means an authority on any of this. So if you'd like to chat about the remake at all with us, please send us an email at theprisonerpodcast@gmail.com. Or follow us on Twitter at Prisoner Podcast. That's what it is,
yeah,
right?
It's at
Prisoner Podcast. It's been so long, I've forgotten what the Twitter handle is.
We're forgetting about it. No, people have been tweeting about the remake one. At least a couple people that I noticed. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and I've gotten messages from a few people who have found our show, unfortunately, after we finished the original series. So hopefully this will give you something more to listen to.
Yeah, we have to come up with a new podcast idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
I already started watching Highlander, so I'm not going to go back and start watching Highlander again.
It's too late. I've learned a lot from these are my first two podcasts I've ever done, this one and the TNG one. And it's a learning process. You certainly pick up things that you're like, you know, you could actually make that last, or that is only good for 10 episodes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But yeah, that's going to be it for this week. So thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next time with episodes 3 through 6.
Be seeing you.
Well, there you go. There's the first 3 episodes of the 2009 AMC remake of The Prisoner. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you found it slightly interesting, and hope you didn't mind not having too many clips of Wet Blanket Caviezel whining about stuff. So the next episode, we'll be covering episodes 4 through 6 and wrapping that up. And then, I guess we're going to be done unless someone decides to do a lot more Prisoner stuff. This is going to be it. So thanks to everyone who's listened, and we will see you next time. Bye.